Hey guys, this is Steve from The Adventure RX, and today I want to do something a little bit different, and I know I say that from time to time, but this is going to be a little bit more of a long-form discussion and interview with my climbing partner, Ryan Little. He also is a Type 1 athlete like myself, and we are going to attempt to climb El Capitan together in Yosemite this fall, and I suspect you're going to be hearing and seeing a lot more from him over the next couple of months because we're going to be doing some training and some climbing together, and I think he has a really valuable perspective on living with type 1 diabetes and adventure and the medicinal properties of getting out and pushing our limits in the outdoors. And one of the things that is a little bit different about this is that this is more of a podcast than a vlog, I guess, this particular episode. And so I've been doing daily vlogs for about the last 2 or 3 weeks. I've made a video a day. And one of the things that I've noticed is that there are some days when I am psyched to go out and play and record the play that I'm getting into, whether it's, you know, running or walking, climbing, hiking, being out on the water. And there are some days when I actually just want to have a conversation with you and say, hey, you know, this is a thing that I want to talk about. And so it occurred to me that it might make sense to add a little bit of variety into the types of videos that I'm making here and to actually do a podcast, a video podcast on YouTube as part of my daily vlogging, so that once a week, probably end of the week, Thursday, Friday, you know, there will be a little bit more of a long form discussion. Sometimes that'll be in the form of interviews, sometimes that'll be opinion pieces or how to, but something that's a little bit more in depth and a little bit more conversational, a little bit more technical in some cases. And that's also an opportunity for you guys to present questions or things that you want to discuss or, you know, objections or challenges, whatever, where we kind of can have a little bit of give and take there from the audience back and forth here. And The Adventure RX actually started out as a podcast, which is something that if you're watching this on YouTube, you may not know that, but if you look on iTunes, Adventure RX is a podcast with episodes that go way back into 2014, before there was any sort of vlogging happening here on YouTube. And since we moved onto the road, and it's been harder to, you know, get studio time to record, I kind of felt like, you know, it wasn't worth trying to do regular episodes of the podcast if I couldn't do it in a sort of studio environment and, you know, edit it the way that I thought was important for the aesthetics of it. And I've decided that ultimately, you know, I need to make do with what I have. And certainly when I'm out playing on the water and kayaking and there's maybe 30 seconds of dialogue or monologue in a video, that probably doesn't need to be on the podcast. But if I'm going to be doing a video podcast once, maybe twice a week, that would be something that could also cross over and people could listen to that on iTunes and I could keep doing work on my podcast and keep that feed alive, because not everybody is able to watch YouTube. And conversely, you know, to be able to have something to offer folks on YouTube that is a little bit more in depth. So if you are into podcasts and you like that, you can listen to these podcast episodes of The Adventure RX on iTunes. If you search for Adventure RX Type 1 Diabetes, you can search for Living Vertical. A lot of different things you can search for to find this podcast. And this is a way that I think we can make a good pragmatic decision to allow us to reach people on different platforms and maybe step back a little bit from the pursuit of aesthetic perfection in the media that we're creating and say maybe it's more important for the time being to be able to just get the message out and keep this conversation happening in as many places as we can. And also, quite honestly, it keeps it fun for me. because there are some days when I just want to go out and play and I don't want to bother dragging a camera around, and being able to have more conversational podcasts that happen after the day is over or before the day has started, where I can just sit down and say, hey guys, let's talk about this. That's really important to me as well. So that's just a little heads up, kind of what's going on here, because I like to keep you guys informed, and I hope that you follow along and that this is of interest to you. So today's episode, I'm talking with Ryan. I want you to get to know him a little bit and some of his perspectives, and I hope you enjoy the interview, and we'll see you afterwards, and I'll wrap it up with some brief thoughts and some action steps that you might want to take after having heard this episode.
I was born out west, born out in Utah, but I grew up all over the place. Grew up in a military family, so I moved a bunch. And I guess I ended up here in Alabama and started rock climbing back in 2009. And then just kind of kept going with that and started out in a gym. And then was like, man, outside is way cooler. So I did that. And then, I don't know, just always trying to do the next big thing. So got into trad, got into big walls, got into alpine, just always trying to find the next big thing. So I got diabetes too, but got that back in 2010, so that was a fun experience.
Were you already climbing at the point when you were diagnosed?
Yes, I was climbing, and it was kind of funny. I had a friend that was, she used to be a climbing coach, and she was just like, I don't know, I climbed with her, I learned a lot from her. And one day we were climbing, and like the legs just kind of weren't working the way they were supposed to. And I had noticed that in a lot of other parts of my life too, like I couldn't run anymore and stuff like that. And I'd always been super athletic. Like I couldn't get my feet very high. And then the next day I went to the doctor, and sure enough, I had diabetes. And she was like, oh, it all makes sense now. So kind of funny.
Now, what kind of an adjustment was that for you? Like, were you concerned at all at that point that your life was going to be significantly different?
Yeah. I mean, there was a big adjustment period. I was, at the time, I was actually in the Army when it happened. So I got out of that, which was all kinds of fun because of medical issues now. And what else? Just like, I don't know, I didn't know a whole lot about it. I had a cousin who had it, and that was about it. And I just didn't really know how I was going to limit my life, so, or if it would, or what to do about it. So didn't know a lot about it.
So what was it like for you kind of starting off adapting your diabetes, which is kind of this new thing that you just got saddled with, and bringing that into the climbing world?
It was definitely like a steep adjustment period, and it still is, but it's not nearly as bad. Like when I first became diabetic, like I wasn't sure how my body was always going to react to climbing and exercise. So I'd always bring like a ton of food or a ton of insulin out climbing for just the day. And I don't know, I was always like, oh, I don't want to give myself insulin in front of everyone. So I'd like walk off and do it. And I don't know, it was just a big adjustment period. And it like affected a lot of other parts of my life too. Like when I got diagnosed, it was actually in the middle of exams in my first year of college. And, the doctor failed to tell me that when you drastically drop your blood sugar, because like they couldn't even measure my A1C at the hospital. They had to send it off to some specialty lab because it was so high. And when they got it down, he failed to tell me that my vision was going to go. And this is in the middle of like college exams and I can't see anything. And I had to like miss a whole bunch of them. And so it was, I don't know, it was a steep learning curve in a lot of parts of my life.
So then, I guess the question that a lot of people ask me, and that I like to hear from other people with type 1 who are interested in adventure sports, is like, why would you choose to do something that is obviously difficult? Like, diabetes is difficult in ways that we understand because we both live with it. But the average person on the street thinks that that's something that, you know, Wilford Brimley, you know, the diabetes guy, that he, you know, they don't really understand what it means, the significance of it. But when people look at El Cap or they look at Mount Everest, they say that's hard, and they get that. So why would you choose to add something that's more difficult onto what you're already living with that is arguably difficult?
Well, I don't know. So I started climbing first, and like I fell in love with it before I had diabetes. And then I've always, I don't know, someone tells me I can't do something or you're going to make it harder, that's just going to make me try even harder. And so that's kind of the approach I went with it. Like, I sure as hell wasn't going to let any diabetes slow me down. So I was still going for it. Just kept climbing and kept going with it. And I mean, it adds a whole new set of challenges to the game, but I don't know. I love it. So I just kept climbing, kept trying to do bigger and better things.
Well, I get that. I'm right there with you. I'm actually, to be honest, a little envious of some of your accomplishments, and inspired, I guess, would probably be more appropriate way to phrase that. Like the stuff that you've done just in what seems like a fairly short time. Tell me a little bit about some of the last couple big adventures that you've had and some of the things that you're most proud of in terms of your climbing.
2 years ago, that's when like I really started like ramping it up with the big objectives, like not so much cragging, I don't know. But we put up a first ascent in North Carolina on Whitesides Mountain. It's this huge, steep, really, it has a reputation, the mountain, of being like really bold. Yeah. And run out. And we put, so there's a bunch of like old school routes that go up it, and we went across it and put up the Whitesides Girdle, is what we called it, me and my buddy Sam. And it was like, I forgot how many pitches, but we had to simul-climb a bunch of it just because there was like no gear for anchors and stuff like that. It was pretty big, and a lot of people have talked about repeating it, and no one's done it yet. So always like trying to poke people into doing it, but no one will do it. And then spring a year, so not this spring, but the one before that, I think it was, I went to Zion and learned how to aid climb. That was like where I learned how to aid climb, and I know it was cool. And then did a couple walls out there over spring break, and we drove out there and did a couple walls, and then I flew back. And after that, I was like, all right, that's what I love. Like, this is awesome. So that August, I flew out to California and attempted to solo a wall, but I got weathered off, and it was a big disaster. But it was still really fun, really neat learning curve. What else? When I first got into multi-pitch climbing, I had this weird idea that I don't know where it came from, but I was like, I want to try a free route on El Cap. Like, that sounds like a good idea. And I talked a couple friends into doing it with me, and we went up and we did free rider, but we ended up calling it the French free rider because we couldn't do some of the moves and we were just pulling gear through the crux. But we did it over 5 days, and one of the days was like, or we say that a form of precipitation fell from the sky in every day. Like, it either rained, it snowed, or it hailed every day. One day was a total rainstorm, and we just sat there in the rain, and I don't know. It was really cool. Made me like fall in love with the valley. Like, I'm psyched to be going back in October. So
yeah, and
it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited as well. And of course, Ryan is going to be my partner as we're attempting El Cap. And I've been in the valley a little bit. I've climbed there, but my experience has been sort of marred with failure and struggle and hard lessons, I guess, in terms of, you know, because I started aid climbing in Zion as well, and it's a much smaller scale, even though there are certain things about Zion that are harder because, like, the rock is so awful there in a lot of places, whereas, like, the valley, you have better rock, but it's huge, and, like, I wasn't prepared for that, and I brought way too much stuff, and it just turned into a junk show. So I'm really looking forward to getting back there with you. And I haven't done anything on this scale successfully, number one, and not with a partner who has type one. So this is going to be, I think it's going to be interesting if nothing else, which could be really bad or it could be really awesome, but it will be interesting nonetheless.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. It might not be a blast during the time, but it'll be a blast like 2 weeks later when we talk about it. So
yeah,
you got to give it that buffer zone.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm looking forward to being able to show a lot of what we're doing on this channel and through a lot of the Living Vertical social media channels, because one of the things that I'm really passionate about, in addition to climbing, it's not just the climbing, but it's the why behind the climbing, kind of what is behind what I asked you earlier about why would you do something difficult that you have a choice about when you have to live with a condition that you that's difficult that you don't have a choice about. And that why is the central question that I'm trying to put out there for other people. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about like what message you want to send to other people, or if this is something that, is there a message? I mean, maybe there doesn't need to be one. What do you think?
Well, it's like you said, it's like diabetes. That's a struggle that me and you have. And it's something that I have absolutely zero choice over. It's not going to go away or without some medical advance anytime soon. Mm-hmm. It's just something I have to deal with. So I like that one doesn't even count as a challenge in my life is how I look at it, because I have to do it no matter what. So it's like a gimme. Yeah. And then it's like, well, all right, so what's the next challenge? Like, what's something I can force upon myself? And I'm like, okay, let's go climb El Cap. That sounds like a good challenge. So that's how I look at it. It's like, I got to deal with diabetes no matter whether I want to accept it or not. So I take that one with a free pass as a challenge, and I got to just pick the next challenge.
So it sounds like you sort of are having fun with it, even though like it's not fun, but you're making it fun in a way.
Yeah.
I mean,
because so like I got to deal with it. Why let it suck?
Yeah. No, I love that. That's great. And I think it's one of the things that I think is so important about adventure being introduced into a medical context is that if you make it scary, it will be scary, and if you make it fun, there's a lot of influence that we have just by the way that we look at things, and everything in medicine is geared towards the body. And what climbing has done for me, it's forced me into a position where I don't have the option to be like worried or scared about my blood sugar. I just have to deal with it and then focus on something else that's more clear and present and obvious. And it really works in a really strange way that, like, that's why I love interviewing other people. So I can be like, okay, I'm not completely insane. I'm not the only person that thinks like this and that thinks that this is something that can help other people change the way they see themselves, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of therapy. In a lot of ways, it's therapy for me as well. And I'm just really stoked that, you know, we were able to connect and that we're going to be able to go and, you know, give it hell, see what happens. And of course, we'll see you in September in North Carolina, which should be interesting because I've never done any climbing in North Carolina, and I know the reputation that North Carolina has for its style of climbing.
Yeah, so. It's all talk. You'll be fine.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully, I won't get busted up there and what have you. Although they're like folks with paraplegia that have done El Cap, so I guess I can't use, you know, whatever may happen to me in North Carolina as an excuse.
Yeah. We'll can't use that as an excuse.
Totally. One more question. And like, you know, with the idea of like adventure and empowerment and making, you know, kind of taking a free pass on that diabetes thing and not making it a bigger challenge than it is, have you had any moments where legitimately you're struggling or feel like you're fighting for your life, like where it gets real? And it's hard.
Oh yeah, definitely. There was, I had mentioned to you before, there was a time this past winter. So I just learned how to ice climb and like alpine climb this last winter up in North Carolina. And we got terribly lost on our descent off a mountain, and blood sugar had tanked. We had no more food, and it was, yep, this is, we're in the shit now. But like you were saying, it's like, you just gotta have to deal with it. Like, my partner Sam turned around and asked me, what are we going to do? Like, your blood sugar's low and you don't have any more food. And like, my Dexcom's like beeping in my backpack. And I said, we're going to keep walking. Like, what else are we going to do? It's not going to get any better eating the snow. Like, we got to keep going down the mountain. But yeah, I mean, it was like below 30 for probably close to like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And we were lost in the woods. like, and we kept like bushwhacking and we'd get cliffed out, and we like knew the car was like in this northwestern direction, and we just kept going that direction. And I mean, sure enough, we found it, but it was like, it was definitely a major concern. That was like the closest I've ever been to being like, oh God, we might have screwed up. We might have pushed it a little bit too much, not planned enough. Like, maybe we should have brought some more food.
Did that event like have any impact on the way you went out the next time when you were climbing? Did you change anything as a result of that? Or was it just like something that you realized could happen and, you know, just kind of brush it off?
I definitely, no, it was actually a big learning curve for me. I'm definitely not as, I don't know, knowledgeable in the diabetes as you are. Like, just from what you've posted and what I've read from your blog, like, you're really knowledgeable about it. And that's something I'm hoping to get out of this, is like, just gain more knowledge about it. And it's kind of bad to say that when you have the disease that you don't know everything about it, but I don't know, I did a lot more research into the different types of carbs and how they act on your body, and I definitely planned my meals better for the next big adventure, which helped a lot. So like, when we went to Alaska, we did a mountain in a 29-hour push, and I definitely brought a lot different style food, a lot different style snacks, and it helped a lot. So,
and just for the viewers and listeners, for context, this 29-hour in a push, this is a pretty insane and massive undertaking that has only really been accomplished, I would say, if you look at the population of people who climb, probably less than 2% of all climbers have done what you just described there. And the fact that you are still fairly, how long have you had type 1? Because you're pretty early in your diabetes career, right? For lack of a better term.
Yeah, I got diabetes in 2010 when I was 18.
So yeah, you're young overall, and you're also early in your diabetes. And to do something like that, it's mind-blowing to me, because I've had it for 17 years and I learned fear, I guess. And it's like one of the things, like the more people I talk to who are doing amazing stuff, a big ingredient that I commonly hear is sort of what you're referencing, that they didn't learn fear. They learned enough to just go out and do stuff and problem solve in the moment when it hit the fan. And that they actually wound up doing okay. And like, for me, the more I've learned, it also comes with an extra burden, because you start to understand what could go wrong more. And like, you start to think about it from a much more negative perspective. And so that, oddly enough, that's kind of what I want to get from you, because there are certain things that I need to take from your not being hyper-focused on the disease to change my attitude about it, so that I can more effectively use the knowledge that I have to do more stuff. Cause that's always been my mission, is like freedom through these adventures. And, you know, I think it's an interesting balance. It's an interesting exchange, cause we're all learning stuff, and like, there's an extent to which you can learn and never stop learning, and then it can turn into information overload. And then you wind up limiting yourself because you're carrying around so much information and so much contingency planning and stuff. So this is pretty rad.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely a constant learning curve. Like that incident in North Carolina, like I was talking about earlier, like I had no clue that my body could function at that low of a blood sugar for that period of time. And like, now I know that I got this little bit of cushion in there. Like, it's not always an issue. So that was kind of cool. And just another bit of knowledge to keep in the back of my head. Like, if a similar situation ever arises, I know how to handle it now. So, yeah.
Well, how would you handle it now? I guess that's a question.
I mean, I know I can just keep going. Like, I don't need to have the fear of like, you can just die here in the snow. Like, I don't need that fear limiting me, as the ultimate goal is to get to the food in the car anyways. So, I mean, that, even if you don't think it slows you down, that fear and that mindset, like, it'll slow you down. It messes with your head game. And it's like, we probably could have gotten there a lot faster had I not been thinking about it the whole time.
I see.
I don't know, just another bit of knowledge to hold on to.
So not curling up in a fetal position and just waiting to expire, but saying, this is kind of what we're saddled with, let's go, because that's the only option. Totally.
That's... Yep, those were the two options, so I decided the better one was to keep going.
Yeah, I love that. So this will be interesting also because of the fact that, like, you know, we've talked on the phone, this is our first video chat or whatever, and we're going to get to meet each other in September for the first time. I think we're going to have a blast in North Carolina. Yosemite is going to be awesome. I'm really, really looking forward to that. And I think that there are a lot of people who are going to see this and kind of been following some of the stuff we're doing and going to be really, really stoked about it. And it's going to be good. So.
Yeah, man, I'm super psyched. It's going to be awesome. So I love the Valley. I'm really excited to go back. So.
Nice. That'll be good. And I'm hoping that we will have timed it right, that it won't be too cold in October, you know, early October, that'll work out to our favor. But we can even play that by ear too, you know, as
yeah, for sure.
Thanks so much for taking the time to be part of our audience for the Adventure RX. If you're listening on iTunes, make sure to watch on YouTube because there's a lot more going on our YouTube channel than just the weekly podcast. There's also daily vlogs, little videos that I'm making every day to change the conversation surrounding type 1 diabetes and to re-examine the way that we look at our limitations and the opportunities that we have to challenge fear in our lives through simply being outside and being active and playing. So if you like any of that, make sure to subscribe on iTunes. You can subscribe on YouTube and check us out on social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, all of those places at Living Vertical. I also wanted to let everybody know who is listening that we are offering more than just digital content. Living Vertical has actually made some strides into the physical print space because recently we launched a Patreon account and we are offering a photo journal that is directed at type 1 athletes who are pushing their limits and adventure projects that are coming from within the type 1 community. And that's something that I would like you to support because I think we have the opportunity to create a publication that is unlike anything else that exists out there. Runners have Runner's World, climbers have Climbing Magazine, Rock and Ice, Alpinist. There's a lot of different magazines directed at different groups of people, but for the type 1 adventurer or the person with type 1 who considers themselves adventurous, there really is nothing out there that they can pick up and say, hey, this represents my mindset. This is something that I want to see more of. And even if you're not a climber or an adventurer, it's something that's very new and it's something that right now is publishing twice yearly. And it's drawing on the projects and the inspiration coming out of the things that I am working on with the people that I encounter. But if this is something that you think is worthwhile and that you would like to check out, visit patreon.com/livingvertical. You can read more about it, see if this is right for you, if it's something of interest. There are also opportunities for people who are supporting our work through Patreon to get digital access to our work, ebooks, photographs, videos that we are producing before they're available to the general public and at no cost. So my goal is really to be able to give back more to the community through the work that I'm doing, and the folks who are supporting us currently are enabling that to happen because Living Vertical isn't sponsored by any corporate entities. We don't have money coming in elsewhere. We don't sell widgets. The work that we do is based around spreading a message of empowerment and encouraging people, and that is something that we rely on support from people with whom this resonates. And you know, supporting things on Patreon is not necessarily right for everybody, and if it's not right for you, hey, continue to enjoy the podcast, enjoy the vlog with my blessing. I'm privileged to have anybody listening and watching because nobody deserves an audience, surely. But if it's something that you want more of and or something that you would want to be more accessible to more people, visit Patreon, see what level you would like to get involved in. You can get the journal, you get photo prints, monthly postcards, all hard goods, that are created from our photography and our art that we're making out here on the road while we're, you know, contributing to this mission. And then, of course, digital products like ebooks and like movies, getting early access to that. And all of my patrons get my deepest thanks in all of the videos that I create. And I'm trying to also make additional content that is a little more personal, that is just kind of behind the scenes, that is just available to the patrons who, you know, kind of raise their hand and say, hey, this is something that I want. I want more behind the scenes. And not everybody needs that or wants that, and that's totally cool. You know, my goal isn't to always be plugging and marketing stuff, but I realize that there are some people who would potentially like more from Living Vertical and would like to see it grow and thrive. And right now we're doing what we can with what we have, and I'm happy and thankful to have the opportunity to do that. So that's all we have for you for this episode. We're getting ready to head out of Spokane and head up into Canada, where I'm going to be meeting my friend Martin. He is also a type 1 climber, and his entire family. We actually named our daughter after his mom, and both of his parents are just incredibly inspiring people and some of the most humble and genuine people, authentic people you ever want to meet. I just adore them, and being able to go and spend time with them for a while and do some climbing together and just kind of get outside and crush it, that's going to be awesome, and I'm looking forward to bringing you along for that. So we will see you in the next episode. Make sure you subscribe, and if you have any questions, my email is steve@livingvertical.org, and there's a whole host of ways that you can get in touch with me through social media. So till the next episode, which on YouTube will be tomorrow, we'll see you.